here for this afternoon, serving tea this afternoon at 2 o'clock. I'll be here for that. I don't know what I'm here for right now, so we'll see. But I brought a little remnant from the calligraphy activity. I'll just share with you a couple of characters that that are relevant at the moment. This first character you can sort of see is Rain. The second character, it has a heart on the left side, and it has a color on the right side. These little things all together mean color. When it's by itself, the color referred to is green or blue. But together with heart, it means the enlivened heart, which means feeling or passion or spirit, that kind of quality. So then together, this refers to the rain's heart, or the rain's passion. So this is certainly what we're all grateful for in these last couple of days, that the rain has this sense or this spirit of sharing its qualities with the whole earth. Everything on earth can benefit from the rain, regardless of whether it's a weed or a redwood tree or a duck or a frog or whatever. So the rain, the spirit of the rain, could also be sympathy. All of these sort of positive and sharing kind of qualities that the rain brings us is sort of the the underlying experience that we have yesterday and today. So it feels very good. So my whole talk is, in a sense, because of and an expression of gratitude. Somewhere it became published that this talk was about gratitude, and I talked about gratitude last time I talked at Jokoji, so it seems to be hanging around. Everything I say, in a sense, is an expression of gratitude in the end for the space and opportunity and vitality that makes it possible to say something or to be alive in this moment. So gratitude is so all-pervasive, in a sense, in our lives, and it's wonderful when we become really aware of it and can respond to it and, in a sense, then reflect it or share it with those or whatever is around us. What I had in mind to talk about today, or to appreciate, in a sense, is the first line of Hakuin Zenji's song on Zazen, and it's written in a bunch of characters, so I thought I would write these characters for you, because in their sort of elemental form, because they're somehow it's a little closer to the feels closer to the meaning if you see the what's more closer to the pictographic form of some of these characters.
Could I ask a question?
Please.
The characters, are they Chinese?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is the it's called the seal script, the early form of the characters, which means all beings. This all is this is an I above here, and then three persons. So when it gets to be three persons, it refers to a crowd, a huge number of persons, and then. So it's all the persons that you can see. So it means all persons, or a crowd, a lot. And then this means, this is a pretty fundamental character which refers to living things. So this is a plant which is growing upward, and it's already maturing because it has already a node here. So it's a plant which is really in growth. So it's a lively plant. Mm. And so this is often translated as, I think all beings is nice, because beings is kind of, you can have it extend as far as you want. Does it include, you know, trees, and does it include stones and volcanoes and so on? This tends to at least mean growing things, things which recognizably grow. But then when you get into physics and so on, things grow differently, different ways. So you can get creative on that. So anyway, this is sometimes translated all sentient creatures, because some Buddhists like to focus more on sentience. Whatever that can extend to, that's still another problem. So, anyway, that's the first two characters. And then the next two characters are kind of interesting. This upper character is a tree. You can see it has branches and roots. And then when this little horizontal is added, then it emphasizes the root aspect. So this is the foundation or bottom of a tree. And then this one again is a plant. It's supposed to be kind of grain, which is has some seeds hanging down from it. So this is a small plant, but it came when the plant matures and is ready for harvest, then. We often say the harvest comes in, so this word means come now. It doesn't have any reference to grain or anything, it just means to come. So this is a root or origin or source, basis, foundation, can have, you know, extend all in that direction. And then this one means come or arrive. So we have all beings, and then we have fundamentally arrived, or it can all be shortened to primarily or essentially. And then the last character, you can probably guess what it's going to be. This is one character. This is, if you've been a good student, you know what this means.
Person.
Person. Okay, and this one is not a dollar sign. This is the binding of two things that are trying to, that are turning from each other. So by itself, it means something negative or non-existent. And so together, this means Buddha.
Together, it means what?
Buddha. So,
the other one meant two things that are non-existent being bound together,
yeah.
And the other one meaning a person, and together they mean a Buddha.
Mm-hmm. So, in some ways it can mean, you know, a person who no longer is himself or something. You can make it into a Buddhist kind of meaning if you want. But it's something which is probably a character which was sort of made, or I mean found, rather than, I doubt if it was created by Buddhists. It was just an available character, probably. And it looked like it might be appropriate. So we have all beings, or all existences, originally, or from the beginning, or basically, Buddhas. So then after this statement, then of course he goes on and has a whole poem, but it all, in a sense, comes back to this understanding or insight. A thing I have always liked about Buddhism is that this kind of statement, which could be interpreted as a, what would you say, a primary article of belief, is in a sense, not that at all. It's a reflection of someone's or various persons' insight or experience, and that's all it is, and they have shared that with us. And this understanding may be possible for us, or is available to us, if we are so either determined or lucky, or if conditions are appropriate, we might have this sort of insight, or maybe our insight will be somewhat different. Maybe that all Buddhas originally are sentient beings.
Are all of these linked? Is it together as one statement?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the first one that you showed, I'm still a little unclear about. This many...
All beings.
All beings?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one means...
originally, or coming from their source.
Buddha.
So someone could understand this, or their experience might be that the meaning of Buddha, or what Buddha is basically my or our foundation. And where is this foundation? Where is my origin or my source? Is it far back, beginning with my parents, or does it go back to the arrival in the new world, or does it go back to the Big Bang? Is it something kind of chronologically first? Is that my origin? Is my origin in some way constantly happening in this moment? Is that one reason why we are sort of constantly encouraged to be in the present moment? Because it's only there that we are at our the only source that matters or that means anything. If time, for instance, is basically only now, and the past is a memory and the future is a sort of memory fiddled with, then all that we have is this moment. So it's only this moment which always is existing, and that's where our origin, the only origin that can be very meaningful to us, it's only in this moment. Talking about our ancestry and the Big Bang is all very enjoyable and fun, but as far as what matters, perhaps those things are just diversions. So sometimes the image is used that if you are looking for your true nature or the Buddha or something, it's really a jewel that's in your hand already. So it's not something far away, not something that you eventually will find in an exotic locale. Somehow it's already in your hand. And then there's a story of the seeker who walked all over the world trying to find what mattered, and he had these fantastic jewels sewn in his cloak the whole time, and he never discovered them until he returned dejected from having had no success. Then the example of the mirror is used. The Buddha mind is like the mirror. And I think it's the mirror is a really tricky one, because I think all of us, when we look into a mirror, it's not a neutral experience. We make some comment about ourselves or what we're going to do or what we have to do to look right, or what has happened to make us look wrong or something. We're looking at ourselves when we look into the mirror. So I think every time we approach a mirror, we have a lot of emotion probably going on, and we never experience a mirror. We never really appreciate a mirror in itself. And one of the qualities, of course, of a mirror is that it doesn't make any comments. It only reflects what comes before it, and it's completely in a sense, egalitarian, because whatever comes before it, it reflects it as it is. If something is a little bottle, then it will reflect as a little bottle. And if it's a great big jar, it will reflect as a great big jar. And that's all it does. It doesn't evaluate the one and the other as being more useful or whatever. The mirror just shows without a pause. It's already right there. And when something comes into the mirror, the mirror fully reflects that. And then when something moves away from the mirror, it's gone. And the mirror retains no memory of it. It doesn't keep that shape somehow sort of hidden in the background, in the silver, in the behind the mirror. All of that is completely gone. So it's fantastically able to completely receive or experience that which is before it, and then when that is gone, it's completely gone, and it's not hanging on to it in any way. So the mirror is can be quite instructive if we can get beyond ourselves in the mirror, which is a big barrier, perhaps. In his poem itself, Hakuin says that there is no ice apart from water, and no Buddhas apart from beings. So that's the first statement he makes after this first reflection. No ice. There is no ice apart from water. And similarly, no Buddhas apart from beings. So ice is a particular condition of water, and so the Buddhas seem to be a kind of condition of beingness, and somehow it conditions conspire to enable that to happen. And if there is no water, there can be no ice, and if there is no being, there can be no Buddha. It's just that simple. So carrying on the sense of water, there's a when I was in Kyoto in the 60s, there was a famous Zen master, Yamada Mumon, and this is a poem. I never saw this poem before until just recently, and I didn't know he wrote poetry, but this is a translated poem. It's probably sounds better in Japanese, but the this is the poem, and just the some of the thoughts are very nice. It's called Like Water. Like water not stagnating, flowingly hope to go. Even if we meet good things, even if we meet bad things, never look back. Keep advancing, hope to go flowingly. Even if we see the beautiful flowers on either bank of the river, even if we hear the birds chirping cheerfully, praising their beauty, taking joy in their cheer, continue on moving forward. They say that flowing water never freezes. They say that running water never stagnates. I believe it is alive, nourishes farms, raises plants, rears fish. Never want a higher place. Towards a lower and lower place like water, I hope to flow. So for me, also, water is is a wonderful image, because this reinforces the sense of flowing and of the staying with this moment as it moments away, we feel like it's moving or something is moving. And if we can flow with it, the term flow is, of course, useful, and not hang on to whatever is wonderful, we'll have lunch after this talk, and we can just, if it's a really good dish, we can just keep trying to get a little more and try to hang on to that wonderful moment. So even the good things, we just they pass, and so we just let them go. And the bad things, we're happy to let them pass. The trouble is, during the bad things, we want them to leave before they are gone. So we have interesting suffering there. And it's not only that water is flowing, but also it sinks down, it goes deeply, and in that sense it's nourishing the earth. And it never water never well never is not exactly accurate, but because it rises up as gas into the clouds, but once it's water, it's always falling, or being willing to go, or having to go to the lowest place. And it just doesn't have to get up on top of things and try to control everything. And yet, everything, in a sense, comes to it. All of the roots and the animals all come to the water eventually, because it has something to offer. Like this bell has something to offer. I wanted to read from this, but we don't need to do that. This is one of the most amazing books I have read in a long time, called Becoming Animal. And his language, the language itself, is just very rich. And he reflects this wonderful sense of the profound interrelatedness of all being, and of how we as humans are really completely integrated into our whole world. It's unfortunate that we're trying so hard to, in a sense, separate ourselves from so much of the earth. Even language, he finds, we are not, with our alphabet language, we have separated ourselves, and we don't go out into the woods and talk with the trees and so on. We don't believe they hear us. And we are insensitive to those subtle energies that happen among all the different sorts of beings that are in our world. And now we have limited ourselves to communicate only with our own kind. And what a profound loss it is. So this book, Becoming Animal, you can remember the title, it's sort of strange. And then this another book which just came out, and Florence Kaplow, who's a practitioner, monk, she and other people put this book together. It's Women teachers responding to various unfamiliar, to most people, koans that have that are in the Zen tradition but are usually ignored because they're about women. And this is a modern one. Crying in despair, an earnest student asks her teacher, Seisho Meili Scott, I worked so hard to transform this crippling loneliness. I can neither shake it nor live with it. Can you help me? Holding the student in a steady gaze and offering her confident smile, Meili ended her conversation with, Please don't ever think anything is out of place. And so then this discussion is, you know, how could she speak so coldly, you know, to such a... But when you explore this sense that don't ever think that anything is out of place, this is a profound, to me, this is a profound call to be in this present moment without reservation. Don't ever think that anything is out of place. It'll be fun when you go up to the dining hall because the things will be out of place there, seemingly. So, thank you.